broadcasting live from Forward Observer Central Command in Austin, Texas. It's the man always out front on issues. You're listening to Out Front with Mike Shelton.
Hello and good afternoon. For the very first time today, good afternoon. Welcome to Out Front. This is the show where we talk about intelligence, security, preparedness, how to build a first world zone in a third world country, and how to win at low intensity conflict, or at least not lose. I'm your host, Mike Shelby. As always, put your questions and comments into the chat. I'd love to have your questions. I don't want to really talk about China and Russia and all the other things going on in the world. I want to talk about domestic issues. Specifically, I want to focus on solutions, understanding what the problem is, and then implementing gray zone solutions for gray zone problems, because that is the situation we find ourselves in. And I'm going to break this down a little bit deeper on today's show. But first, this has been a long time coming. We finally have 6 ebooks getting ready to be published over in the Gray Zone Study Group. These are book summaries. So they're books written by other authors. We have read them. We have condensed them down. Out of the Mountains is available right now. If you go over to Gray Zone Study Group, if you're already a member, you just navigate. I sent an email out about it earlier today. You just sign in at www.grayzoneactivity.com/login. Go to the Gray Zone Study Group and then click Monthly Book Summaries. Out of the Mountains is already there. It's by David Kilcullen. It's a really good book. It's about the coming, I think the subtitle is The Coming Age of the Urban Gorilla or something like that. And it is 350 pages long. We have condensed it to 29 pages of notes. It would take you about 14 hours to read. We've got it down to about roughly 30 minutes, about the time it takes to watch a TV show. You could read our notes and get that whole book. As everybody knows, not all parts of these books are beneficial or useful. And some of these chapters are just filled with fluff. I mean, I swear, some of these 250, 300, 350 page books could be about 50 pages. And so don't waste your time reading all this stuff. We're going to help you out with that with the Gray Zone Study Club. Later this month, we're going to have War in 180 Characters. That's about how social media is reshaping conflict in the 21st century. We have War of the Flea, which is the classic study of guerrilla warfare. Unrestricted Warfare, which is the manual that the Chinese People's Liberation Army colonels wrote back in the 1990s about how to defeat the United States. We have The Art of Counter-Revolutionary War, which is by far the best book I have read on the topic. It is the absolute best book I've read. And that again is like, I don't know, 300, 350 pages. I boiled it down to, I don't know, 30 or 40 pages of notes, and it is dense notes too. This is not just word for word. Here's essentially what he said. I mean, this is like some heavy, hard hitting stuff on low intensity conflict and counterinsurgency, guerrilla warfare, all sorts of topics like that. And then Networks of Rebellion. It's a fantastic book. It is about how insurgent groups form, how they strengthen, and ultimately how they collapse. And there's a lot of good stuff in this book about how to fight against insurgent groups, how to take the wind out of their sails, how to push them back to previous phases of low intensity conflict or previous phases of an insurgency, and ultimately how to defeat insurgents. And this goes backwards and forward. It's a really great book. It's very interesting. And that's why I read it and took notes. You can get that over at www.grayzoneactivity.com. You hit the training tab, go to the Gray Zone Study Group. You'll be able to get in there. And all 6 of those eBooks in PDF and EPUB will be available. All right. Also, there's a question here about the area study book. Yes, I'm working feverishly trying to get that area study book out. I'm going to put it up for pre-sale this weekend. I have to build a new kind of like a new e-commerce store for it. It's going to be super simple. That's going to go up for pre-sale next week. It's going to be published. I'm going to try to be done. I will be done completely with the manuscript no later than the 20th of September. That's in just a little over 10 days. Then it's going to go out and be edited and printed. And there I'm really going to try to get these in the mail no later than like the 3rd or the 4th of October. I've already figured out how long it's going to take to print and all that good stuff. So I'll send an email out and we'll talk about it later. All right, let's go ahead and get into the stuff that I want to talk about. First, I want to address this Biden speech. I know it was forever ago. However, I want to address a few things. If Biden's goal in this speech is to warn the country against the America First movement, or warn the country against Trump, or warn the country of, or try to reform MAGA, the MAGA movement, he would have been much better addressing the MAGA movement directly. Now, I know nobody wants to hear from him, but he could have done this in such a way that would have been a lot more beneficial than what he did. And one of the things, if I were advising Biden, one of the things I would do is I would say, look, you have to understand some of the things that are pissing them off. And if you work on some of those things that are pissing them off, they will probably be less pissed off about this stuff. And Biden could have come through. And he said, look, I know you're concerned about border security. We're going to ramp up border security. We're going to spend more money. And I know why he doesn't do this. I'm just saying, if he were a uniter and not a divider, if he were a healer and not just trying to rub salt in the wounds, this is what he would do. He would say, we're going to focus on border security. I know that is a primary, a really important issue for you. And we're going to do more. We are going to shut the border down, and I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen. And if we have to go through a half dozen DHS secretaries, we're going to get it done. And I tell you what, man, if Biden had come out and said that, I would be like, holy cow. I mean, I know it's just words, promises, 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 words. But that really would have gone a long way to solving the problem that he's complaining about. If he had come back and said, all right, look, we are going to do more on illegal immigration. Here are three or four things that my administration is going to do. I would say, holy cow, who is this guy? And what did he do with the bumbling idiot who was here yesterday? And I would have applauded that. And that really would have gone a long way in bridging the gap. But Biden did not bridge the gap. He made it even farther apart. So point is, Democrat, he is not going to win by bridging the gap with the MAGA movement. He is going to win by alienating the MAGA movement, by reinforcing that strategic message that, you know, he says, I know he kind of walked this thing back, or I think earlier this week, he said, I don't mean to say that all MAGA Republicans are terrorists, or not all of them are fascists, or whatever he said, but the damage had already been done. The fact of the matter is the core issue of our low intensity conflict, the polarization while we are at each other's throats, mainly proverbially and rhetorically, is because this is primarily a fight between old America and new America. You have large segments in this country who are pushing for a refounding of America. The old America is racist. It's capitalist. It's white supremacist that benefits the 1%, it X, Y, or Z's. And now we have to refound this country with a new stock of people with a new ideology for a new time. And this is exactly what they're doing. And you have people who say, no, we don't want to go along with that. And you have the new America folks who say, well, too bad. This is the country we're building now. You can vote for us in the future and vote for democracy, or you can vote with the fascists and be a part of old America if you want. But that's the core matter of what's happening today. And so one thing before we get to the next point here, and that is Lafayette Lee over on Twitter. He's worth a follow. His Twitter handle is partisan_O. And he put a quote up on Twitter today that I thought was really good. It's a quote from Sam Francis's Leviathan and Its Enemies. And Sam Francis really, really understands. He nails what's happening here. He writes, quote, "The megastate exists for the purpose of social manipulation. Its elite, trained in the techniques of social engineering and social therapy, gains power and budgetary resources by inventing social problems and crises and then designing and applying solutions for them." What do they call that? The Hegelian dialectic? You create the problem, then you come in with a solution. Something like that. That's a Cliff's Notes version. And this is exactly what's happening. Guys, this is exactly where the fight is. And more, this fight is not just in D.C. It is in your school boards, and it is in local politics, in county and state politics. They're pushing this dialectical problem all the way, this dialectical strategy, all the way to the lowest levels of this country. They are remaking the country at every level. This is where the fight is. The fight is not with your AR-15, like some effing Rambo, whatever. The fight is in the gray zone. The fight is, this is predominantly political warfare. This is a political problem. It predominantly needs a political solution. Yes, there are also social and economic aspects here. By the way, I don't know how true this is, but some people are reporting that Steve Bannon just broke, I guess he's got on his podcast or whatever, that at least 35 Trump allies had their homes raided yesterday by the FBI. Again, I don't know how true this is, but this certainly, I mean, I guess they're going to try to get him on RICO charges or something. I don't know. But this is a brave new world. This is a new country. This is just not your parents' country, your grandparents' country anymore. This is a new America. The point that I want to make, I'm going to bring this home here for, let's talk about solutions here. As I'm going through and writing this area study book, which again, I think is going to be published in early October. As I'm going through here, I'm realizing that I'm always trying to figure out how to rephrase things. And the real challenge of intelligence in area preparedness is not just meeting your neighbors. I know a lot of people say, I held a potluck, or we had a get together this weekend, or we're going to do this next weekend. And I met my neighbors, and that's good, man. That's a really good start. We got to meet our neighbors. But the real challenge is actually two things. It's two extra steps beyond that. It's number one, knowing what they believe about their political ideology, about old America versus new America, about the proper relationship between man and state, the role of the government, so on and so forth. And then number two, knowing what they know about the local area. Really, your job as a local intel guy or gal is to recruit these people into a formal or informal organization, whether that's a preparedness network, a neighborhood watch, potentially a mutual assistance group, whatever you got going on, and to absorb their knowledge into your area study and into your knowledge. In the Army, we call this a common operating picture, right? Everyone understands what's going on. There's a really great book called Team of Teams by Stan McChrystal. And I don't care for him personally or his politics, but the book is very good. And he talks about when he remade JSOC, he's Joint Special Operations Command. He's really talking about the intelligence and the knowledge management portion of rebuilding JSOC, because the organization they had when they got to Iraq is not the organization they needed. And so he talks about this concept of shared consciousness. And he talks about all the different things that they did in intelligence with collectors and analysts to make sure that that there was a good flow of information, that people shared information, that people passed it on, that key critical pieces of information weren't falling through the cracks. And I will tell you, unless you have a deliberate effort, unless you are very deliberate in what you're doing with knowledge management, it's not enough. It's not enough just to meet your neighbors and talk with them, right? I mean, you have to absorb what they know. And some of them, you're going to be able to sit down and just say, hey, let me pick your brain. I'm working on my area study. I'm just, you know, in case the wheels fly off this country, I'm trying to figure out what we can expect and how we can prepare locally. And some of those people, I'm sure, will be pretty amenable to saying, hey, you know, actually, that's a great idea. I've kicked that idea around in the back of my mind. Let's sit down and let's figure this out. Okay, great. Spill your guts. Tell me what you know. What are your concerns? What are you concerned about locally? Start with 5 meters beyond your home. Okay, 25, 50, 100 meters beyond your home. A mile out around your home. What's your next concern? And just start hitting all those local threats or vulnerabilities or limitations. And then also order the area study handbook, and you can go through, and I provide this very long checklist. It is very thorough. It includes rural and urban considerations as well for building an area study. Then you take that area study, you figure out what your problems are going to be, or what your problems already are, and then you can start identifying solutions. The area study is absolutely critical, and I highly recommend you get as many people on board as possible, because intelligence is a team sport. Now, meeting your neighbors is great, but you're not doing really well until you figure out what your neighbors know and what they believe. Also, I get questions about this all the time. And people say, I've talked to my neighbors. They're just not interested. They don't care what I have to say. They're not interested in preparedness. Okay, I feel your pain. A big part of this is actually sales. Okay, it's inform and influence. This is a fundamentally a sales process. Your ability to inform and influence people around you is a foundational part of community preparedness. Until you enlist local help, you cannot be preparing your community. And so many people ignore these soft power skills, yet they are so crucial to this mission of emergency preparedness and community security. Getting community buy-in from neighbors and from influencers and important people in the community. And I'm sure you've seen this whenever wildfires, earthquakes, flooding, hurricanes, tornadoes, whenever they go through and devastate an area, it's always like, oh yeah, Townsville strong. And we're going to rebuild whatever town this is. And this county's going to come together. That's the kind of feeling that we need, just not after a disaster, but before the disaster. And so you can really be a central element in this by doing these things. So just before we get to some questions here, one of my biggest problems is that people really ignore the soft power skills, and that it really is right now the most important skill you can have. But maybe buying that seventh AR-15 is going to be the final straw you need to organize your community. I think that's going to work. Unfortunately, that's the mindset of a lot of people. I'm going to go out and buy another rifle. I'm going to go out and buy some gadget or buy some backpack, and I'm going to rebuild my 70-pound bug out bag. And guys, that is just not solving any problems, especially if you have not already done your area study. All right. We've got lots of questions or lots of comments at least. All right. As a reminder, go ahead and hit the Q button on your keyboard before you submit a question. And that way I'll know I can just scroll down until I see Qs. How do we clean up? There we go. How do we clean up or get rid of the influence of all legacy media on all aspects of information dispensing in our country? Well, the easiest way is to walk away, and the easiest way is to turn it off, and the easiest way is to get other people to turn it off. And news consumption is voluntary. One reason, I tell you, I hear from Ford Observer subscribers all the time. They say, one reason I subscribe to Ford Observer is because you talk about things that I do not hear anywhere else. I don't hear it on Fox News. I don't hear it on Newsmax. I don't read it in newspapers. I don't see it on any other cable media. You talk about things that I have no idea that are happening, but and they're important. And so a lot of ways, we get a massive amount of word of mouth marketing at Ford Observer. And so the question then becomes, well, how do we take this concept of people people sometimes know what they don't know, but they don't know what they don't know. How do we inform them of what they don't know, so that they're like, man, I'm going to stop watching Fox News because they talk about Britney Spears and Queen Elizabeth and whatever, and I'm going to turn on whatever. I'm going to go to Ford Observer because they're talking about things I can actually be preparing for. They talk about things that really matter to me. And so the best way, I think, the best way is just to share much better sources of information, in my opinion. Chris says the October 3rd is his birthday. Chris, I am going to finish the area study book because I knew it was your birthday. That's why I picked that day. All right. How do you keep track of your network and your sensors? Do you write down notes about every conversation? How do you share this kind of info with your people? Okay. Man, that's a great question. So security comes before everything else. Okay. So there are things that I don't write down there. I don't keep notes. I put things in my area study if I think it's pertinent, something that I want to remember about the area, absolutely put it in your area study. And this also kind of, this also kind of depends on if it's, you know, pre-disaster or post-disaster. So one thing that I would recommend everyone get is make some like 3x5 index cards or 5x7 or whatever they are. Because after a disaster, you can take notes on those things, like if you don't have electricity, right? And in the top right-hand corner, you can put kind of a date time group. And so, you know, you can kind of make like a running intelligence summary of all the things that have happened and keep your notes on there. As far as, you know, your sensors, the way that it's done in the military, you know, of course, all this stuff is classified and you have source descriptions and code names and source numbers and stuff like that, which is pretty advanced. I don't necessarily recommend doing that, especially if you're just running a really an informal preparedness group. But, you know, how do you keep track of your sensors? You know, I just have what you're probably going to find is there's a Pareto principle involved, and 20% of your sources are going to give you 80% of the good information. And so, and 80% of your sources are going to give you 20%. So that's one way. The other way is you've got to subtask stuff, right? I mean, I can't have 100 or 200 people coming to me and all vying for my attention, try to get me stuff. So they can email it, they can text it in the group, or they can tell someone else, and that someone else can kind of help filter the information and take notes and all that stuff. So I would just stress in general, just stress security. Security really does come before everything else. So I would not be taking laborious notes on your Google Drive, for instance. Could non-cooperation and complete disengagement be the best option during societal collapse? You mean like not cooperating with your, you mean like the opposite of what I'm saying? No, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think that's a good strategy. When you disengage and when you fail to cooperate with the people who surround you, eventually you're going to become estranged from the people who surround you. And if they have good enough reason, you're not going to be one of them. You're going to be othered into that other category. Like this guy who lives over here is not one of us. And then you're just going to open yourself up to all sorts of problems, like criminality or property crime or worse, depending on how bad the situation is. So, no, I think engagement is probably the better of the two options. So listen, I understand that not everywhere is going to have highly cooperative people who live around you. And this is not even to speak of their desire to cooperate with you. I'm just saying in general, if you can build a spirit of cooperation with the people who live around you, you're going to be much, much better off. Because remember, it is not in low intensity conflict. It is not the best armed person who wins low intensity conflict. It's the person who can bring the most people. Because people are resources, their skills, their knowledge, it's manpower, it's sensors and information. And in general, people are going to be your most powerful tool or most powerful weapon, especially in terms of social power. When you disengage from a community, you are ceding any ability to wield social power. When you disengage, you're ceding your ability to wield political power, ceding your ability to wield economic power. And that's actually those are the things that you actually need. That's the tools and the power that you actually need in a low intensity conflict. All right. Looking for another question. Oh, here we go. Yeah, this is good. Yeah, I forgot exactly. Someone else had a similar comment there. Oh, yeah. Before I answer this question. So there was a commenter the other day on the channel, and he said, man, you know, it makes me feel like really good when you're the guy on the Titanic that's getting a group around and say, all right, everyone gather around. Like, you know, we've got to have a plan. And then he says, and then you go on to say, well, it's pretty messed up and we're screwed. So let's form a committee to talk about how to prevent this for the next time or something like that. And that just completely misconstrued my point. Either this guy doesn't have very good listening comprehension, or he's just trying to create a straw man. So I'm not about building a committee for the sake of building a committee. I'm about building a spirit of cooperation and pushing responsibilities down to the lowest level possible, giving people, making sure that members of the community are actually stakeholders in their own security, meaning they have a role to play, meaning if they see something, say something, meaning they can sit out on their front porch and look for suspicious activity in the community. I mean, they can radio things in, call an assault or salute report. Those are the kinds of things that you are going to need during a during an emergency, whether it's natural or man-made. So the next issue I want to address is you're not going to win anything politically when the government just changes the rules if they lose. Well, and I tell you, I'm not worried about the federal government changing the rules. I am more concerned about the political power we can wield, the social power we can wield at the local level. And yes, maybe there is an element that dirty politics will play a role when you try to organize a community and vote in good leaders. I'll tell you, I take a pretty active interest in people who have political aspiration and locally, and people who would be good political leaders. And when you identify those people and you organize a community behind them, guess what? You become the local government. And so that's what you need to be doing, is trying to become the local government. And once you become that, you can't violate your own rules. You can't go back and engage in the same corruption that the other party did or the other guys did. And this is not even really about political parties here. But you have to be the change that you want to see in the government. And that starts with building social power and building political power, and then making sure that the government rules do not change to benefit a specific person or specific people, because now you are the government and you can make sure that those rules are not changed for the benefit of someone else. The police chief in my area is evasive on his views. Well, police chiefs are not elected. They're appointed. And so, I mean, I guess, really I guess a police chief doesn't really owe you his position on anything like a sheriff does. A sheriff has to at least take a position in many things or explain his position in order to get elected or stay elected. Again, man, if you don't like what's happening politically, build some social power and find a political vehicle to use that social power to make changes locally. There's a reason why the left, there's a reason why they always go out and protest, because they make the news. They make it seem like, 90% of this county hates this guy's guts. You got to fire him. You got to replace him. It's the same thing they do on Twitter, on social media, and other places. It's the same thing they do when they have thousands of calls into a restaurant saying, I don't like what this person said or did on Facebook or Twitter. You have to fire them. And then this poor kid, made a bad joke on Twitter, and now he gets fired from his little server job or whatever at the restaurant because he said something stupid on Twitter. Meanwhile, they won't lift a finger to do the same thing to extremely corrupt politicians who do far worse things. It's all about power. It's all about wielding social power to build political power. That's what the left does. We need to take a chapter out of that book, or take a page out of that chapter, and apply that to the local level for community preparedness. Because if you don't, if you are not building and wielding political, social, and economic power, they may not be wielding it against you today. They will eventually get to your area. Because I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but deep red areas have political decay. And this is a concerted effort of moving this revolution from political revolution from the depths of DC or the heights of DC all the way down to your little local county that nobody cares about. And they're doing it. And they're doing it through political, social, and economic power. And if you do not engage on the political, social, and economic level, you're going to get steamrolled. And I don't care how many AR-15s you have, you're going to lose, period. Because That is not what wins low intensity conflict. It's political, social, and economic power. Shouldn't we be collecting skills for sustainment? Spend your money on developing skills, construction, wielding, mechanical. Yeah, absolutely. Sustainment is a big part of this. You have to be able to sustain operations by, you know, we call it combat support and combat service support in the Army. You have to have support. But where the combat happens is in political, social, and economic spheres. So yeah, in terms of preparedness, yeah, you've got to be able to sustain your homestead. You have to be able to sustain your area or your small farm or your ranch or whatever. Sustain your community, sustain your suburb. But that's just for sustainment. That's just for getting through to the next day. When we're talking about actual sustaining combat, combat happens, I mean, not literally physical combat, but it happens in political, social, and economic spheres. So the next question becomes, is what do you need to sustain political operations? What do you need to sustain? What do you need to sustain social and economic operations? And man, when we start thinking about political, social, and economic power in terms of operational planning and mission statements and METTC and mission essential task list, when we start to operationalize this, it is going to start making a whole lot more sense to you. And when you start selling that message to your community, they're going to say, oh, I understand what the end goal is here. I understand the strategy. I understand the tactics of what we're going to do to push forward this strategy. And I know exactly how I'm going to help. I know exactly what I can do at the local level to pitch in and keep rolling this boulder uphill. If you're not doing these things, you're going to lose. It is a matter of time before you lose. Is there a danger of being labeled paramilitary? Of course. Oh, Northern Ireland. Yeah, of course. Of course, there's a danger in being labeled paramilitary. That's why, I mean, that's one of many reasons why I talk about political, social, and economic power. Because that's a soft power that you can wield every single day. You can practice that. Every moment you're awake, you can be building and wielding political, social, and economic power. When you get 50 people to a protest, no one's going to look at you and say, oh, that's a paramilitary force, because it's a bunch of like moms and teenagers and granddads and whatever and other people walking around with signs, calling attention to whatever your mayor's doing, calling attention to whatever your school board's doing. And, you know, no one can really look at that and say, well. Now, if you show up armed, if you show up in all kit, all your warfighting apparel, if you're going to go out and LARP. Well, then, yeah, it's very easy to be say, oh, this is a militia group. Narrative control is very, very important in low intensity conflict. And people are going to lie about you. People are going to and they know they're doing that. And they're doing that for a reason, because they are trying to build social power for themselves by taking it away from you. And so this is another reason why information operations really matters. Having a good narrative, maintaining legitimacy and credibility in everything you do. Okay, that's a soft imperative or something like that. Maintain legitimacy and credibility through all your actions or it's something like that. All right. Any other questions? By the way, guys, listen, I'm not saying that there's only one way. All I'm saying is that I want to win. And if I thought that we could win through any other method, through any other strategy, I would be telling you that strategy. But this is a strategy that I know works, because this is a strategy that has been a deciding factor in many low intensity conflicts. And when you start to write out a list of reasons why a particular side in low intensity conflict, why they won or why they lost, a lot of that stuff comes down to, well, they didn't have political legitimacy. They were not able to maintain political power. The other side wielded more social power against them, and that's why they lost. They couldn't build economic power. They could not keep the local economy functioning, and that is why this side lost. All right, I'll be happy to take any other questions, but I don't want to be repetitive, but man, I tell you, I mean, let me just repeat this quote again. This is from San Francis in his book, Leviathan and Its Enemies. The megastate exists for the purpose of social manipulation. Its elite, trained in the techniques of social engineering and social therapy, gains power and budgetary resources by inventing social problems and crises, and then designing and applying solutions for them. So let's break this down and actually look at the points of conflict here. So the megastate exists for the purpose of social manipulation. My first question is, how do they practice social manipulation? What are their channels, or how do they distribute, or how do they practice social manipulation? Let's figure out what those things are and take them away. And one of those things is local government. And so the people who do this are trained in social engineering and social therapy. They gain power and budgetary resources. Okay. That stems from their position in government. And there's a certain level of legitimacy there. Oh, well, these guys they're the mayor and the county commission, and they're saying they need to spend $1 million on CRT programming for public schools. You may not like it, but there is some level of legitimacy there because those people have been presumably fairly elected. All right, great. So they're doing this through the county commission. They're doing this through the school board. They're doing this through the mayor's office. Well, you know what you do? You build enough political and social power that you take that power away from them, and they can no longer wield that power through their current channels. And I'm not saying this is easy. I'm not even saying that it's possible in most cases. This is not going to be possible in DC or Chicago or New York or LA or Dallas or anywhere like that. However, outside of there, the places where you live, you have to be doing this. Because if you are not doing this, if you're not competing in this sphere, they are, and they will eventually win if you are not competing. All right, I'll take one more question. Maybe one more question. How's your timeline and energy crisis looking, Mike? I don't know. I think obviously the United States is not going to be hit as hard as Europe will. I tell you, more than an energy crisis right now, I'm concerned about a financial crisis. I've been talked about that yesterday and today over in the Ford Observer early warning high side about what could be the next financial crisis. It's going to be one of two things. Well, I can't say for sure it's going to be one of two things, but I'm looking at two top proponents right now. It's either number one going to be the $22 trillion treasury bond market collapse, or it's going to be some kind of potential global contagion from the Chinese real estate market collapse. We have not seen the worst of either of these two things yet. You look at the stock market, typically the fall, September and October are brutal years, are brutal months for the stock market. You look at the Fed raising interest rates. Just wait until you start seeing what jobs numbers do here in the next couple of months. It's going to be a dark fall and winter. I'm far more concerned about economic and financial conditions right now than I am energy conditions. Worst comes to worst, I can go out and chop wood and heat my home this winter. I don't know. Get a solar generator, or get some kind of generator. All right, where do you get the study zone? So here's the deal: you can go to www.grayzoneactivity.com/training. There you go. www.grayzoneactivity.com/training. I think it's over on the right-hand side. By the way, we do have a surveillance course coming up in Las Vegas. It's a three-day course. The first day, we're going to be doing a kind of a crash course on tactical intelligence and ISR. And the second day, we're doing surveillance. It's about a half a day classroom and half a day field surveillance work. And then the third day, we're doing about a half a day classroom, half a day field counter-surveillance and surveillance detection. And you can get more details on that at www.grayzoneactivity.com. And I believe we are going to do another course. I think it may be in November in Pennsylvania. And I got to double check on that. But we'll post it up on online as soon as those dates get nailed down. All right. Any other questions? I'll do one more and then I got to go. I don't have to go. I like spending this time with you, but if you don't have any more questions, I will go. A little boy gave his lemonade stand money to build the wall and Bannon pocketed it, lock him up. Well, I'd say allegedly. I mean, I haven't read the charges, but if that's what he did, yeah, I mean, that's fraud. Sure. I just ask, listen, let me just say this while I wait for one more question. I don't have a problem with the Department of Justice going after Trump if Trump broke the law. What I do have a problem with is them going after Trump and not going other people who broke similar laws or did far worse things. This is another thing that is eroding the legitimacy of government when one party only goes after the opposite party when they're in power. When the Department of Justice, listen, if there were equal and fair treatment under the law of everybody, regardless of political party, regardless of your income or your socioeconomic status, or regardless of your station in life or your affiliation with the government or affiliation with politics, if they enforced all laws equally and fairly, all just laws equally and fairly, there would be no such thing as former President Donald Trump. The dude would not even have become president if they were fair and impartial in their application of the law. It's the frustration. That's what the other side really needs to understand. It is the frustration of conservatives with the system that benefits other people more than it benefits them. The system they're paying into, the system they are supporting, no longer benefits them equally. And that is what got Donald Trump elected. Last question. How do you think the housing crisis we're entering now plus energy crisis will affect the midterms? Well, I still think the Republicans are likely to take the House. Senate, I don't know because, first of all, polling data is probably going to be skewed. I have not looked. I have not looked at, you know, one really bad thing they're doing in 2016 and again in 2020, right? They would come out and they say, oh, these two candidates are neck and neck, Republican and Democrat, within the margin of error. And you go back and you look at the poll and look at, oh, they said, oh, we're plus 8 Democrats that surveyed because we think there's Democrats are going to come out in plus 8 percentage points over Republicans for voter turnout. Okay. Well, I mean, that's just an assumption. So even if the poll is accurate, it's still going to be skewed, whether deliberately or not. So I'm naturally distrustful of most polls. However, I will say this, and I think I may have gotten into a little Twitter argument with someone the other day. A poll doesn't have to be 100% accurate to still be generally accurate. And so, you know, when there are polls that come out and say, well, this person's ahead, I say, okay, yeah, that person may be ahead. Okay. Or depending on the poll, yeah, that person's probably ahead. It may not be by 7 or 10 points. Maybe it's only by 4 or 5 points, but I think polls can be generally accurate without being specifically accurate. How's this going to affect the midterms? I think the worst of it is probably going to happen after the midterms. That's my expectation because the midterms are now 2 months away. And I think the first half of 2023, I think it's going to be absolutely brutal. That's just my take. Thank you, Pancho, for the super chat. All right, with that, guys, hey, look, I appreciate the support. Again, you can go to Grayzone, www.grayzoneactivity.com/training. Sign up for the Grayzone Book Club. Out of the Mountains is already up, available in PDF and EPUB for all your digital reading needs. And then we have five other book summaries coming out. starting next week. And with that, everyone, listen, I'll be back over at Ford Observer. We're doing the daily essay every morning now at 9 a.m. Love to see you over there on the Ford Observer channel. And I'll be back on Open Line Friday, next Friday. So everyone, have a great weekend. And until then, be well and stay out front.